Well, welcome back to another episode of EPL State of Mind, your ultimate source for all things Premier League. I'm your host, Sean, joined alongside me, my good friend, Kyle Mansley. And we're thrilled to be with you to discuss the highs and lows and everything in between from the latest round of fixtures. And we are so happy to have the Premier League back after the international break. It didn't disappoint from almost every game, except for the game that mattered the most, the Manchester City and Arsenal game, which we'll get into in a little bit. Obviously, the Newcastle-West Ham drama at St. James's Park and Liverpool returning to the top of the table. But before we really get into that, we do need to address a notable absence. Our mellifluous midfield maestro, James, is out with a bad case of strep throat.
Alleged strep throat. I mean, the man is 28 years old. To get strep throat at this age is just ridiculous.
You have to call into question his immune system, and you have to call into question if Arsenal-Man City was the worst game that we've seen this season. I do want to say, you know, on a positive note, we'll have James very well rested. He said he's just going to constantly rewatch that game. So there's a cure for an insomnia right there. He should be well rested and back next Monday.
Yeah, that was a pretty brutal game to watch. I think, to be fair, I was looking at all the games. Man City fans are like the worst fan to be this week. Every other team at least had some positives. The teams that won in the relegation zone, they moved up a little. This, that. I think even the draw for Arsenal away at the Etihad, same points for each team, but I think that's a bigger win for Arsenal. I think City took the biggest L of everyone this weekend.
Yeah, you definitely could argue that. And speaking of taking L's, I have to wear one. The guy I highlighted to be the next Liverpool manager will not be, for sure, we can say that. But why don't you start us off with the news about Xabi Alonso?
Yeah, well, to start off, the streak continues. Unbelievable streak they're doing right now. They are still unbeaten in all competitions, and they are now 13 points clear of Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich did not beat, I think they actually lost to Dortmund this weekend for the first time in, correct, I want to say, 8 years. So it is a huge, huge turning point. And even Thomas Tuchel went out in the interview and said the season's over. And that's a staggering thing to say with a bunch of games left in the season. But for what's going on, I can't blame them. They are on a warpath right now. Alonso is rumored to be the top candidate for both Bayern and Liverpool, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he pretty much said he's not leaving Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, that's right. So he's announced, I believe it was on Thursday of last week, that he'll stay for at least the 2024-2025 season at Bayer Leverkusen. And it does set up for him to potentially do another year there and then jump to Real Madrid and that super team that they're building when Ancelotti's contract expires at the end of 2026.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also just impressed on how they're winning these games. I feel like every time I'm getting a text every weekend, hey, the streak's over, check it out. It's the 85th minute, they're down by two. And somehow, I think this weekend they had a goal in the 88th and the 91st to salvage the win. Like, 5 minutes left in the game, they're losing again. It's incredible what they're doing over there.
Yeah, it's been a tremendous season for them, and certainly still more to come. Obviously, they're only three wins away from clinching the Bundesliga, and they're also into the quarterfinal of the Europa League and the DFB Pokal final, I believe, unless the semifinals haven't happened yet. Regardless, like we said, they're undefeated. Just four draws all year and one in every other game they've played in. It's remarkable. And hopefully something that will be remarkable as well will be the 2024 Olympics. We have an announcement today about the groups in that competition. The tournament will kick off with USA versus France on July 24th. The U.S. is obviously with the host France, and then also New Zealand and Guinea in their groups. There's four groups in total, 16 teams, top two advance. So it's basically like a half watered-down version of the World Cup. But one important note is that this tournament functions as a under-23 tournament. There's 18 players allowed from each squad, but you cannot have more than three players over the age of 23. One notable interested party in playing over the age of 23 is Kylian Mbappe, who expressed interest in participating in Thierry Henry's France side. But as James covered a couple weeks ago, if Real Madrid, I mean, that's likely his next destination, if they say they want him in training camp early, He basically alluded to the fact that he's willing to step aside and not play for his country. Obviously, he'll play at the Euros as well this summer. But it's a big summer of soccer for the USMNT. Obviously, the Copa America will also be held in the U.S. In June. And then, you know, potentially we'll see some future USMNT stars shine in the World Cup. That would be, the Olympics, which would be great as well.
Yeah. No, I think I'm really looking forward to it. I think the soccer within the Olympics got a lot of traction last time around. So this will be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And I mean, I also like the whole three guys over 23. Like, it, this is a young guys tournament. It's the Olympics. It's fun for the players. It's something you should experience in the start of your career. But once you start to focus, once you get into that old stage, your mid-20s, late-20s, early-30s, focus on club. Focus on country, not in the Olympics, on real stuff. Don't risk the injury. I really like these rules.
Yeah, I do. What I think the guy the most recently that played in the Olympics as an overage player was Neymar, and helped Brazil win it. I think that was in 2014, or maybe 2012, something like that. It was 2012. But regardless, definitely something to keep an eye on. And we'll see this summer. But I think, first of all, we got to start it off with Manchester City, Arsenal, and the weekend wrap up. First versus third place, a can't lose game, and both teams played like it. Just three shots combined on target in this one. I'll throw it to you first, though. Just kind of give me overall how you feel about it. I know you said that you felt like it was definitely a better point for Arsenal than for City. But just kind of give me your overall takeaways on the match and what you took from it.
Well, upsetting. I mean, Arsenal did have less shots than City. City weren't playing as much on their heels as I thought they would. It's been Pep's mindset as of late when he goes up against top teams. You really see him with the high possession but very low shots. It's been a struggle to score on those top five teams for the entire season. And I think James brought the point up today where City has not beaten a top five team yet all year. So it's almost as though he's getting nervous around him, but I don't know. I think the big problem we had was that Haaland and KDB were just nowhere to be found. I think Haaland might have been the worst player on the field. His positioning was all wrong. He wasn't really running for shit. It was just not a good game as a City fan. And you're at home. You have to score at home. It's been, almost 3 years since City was shut out at home. How can you play on your heels defensively like a scared little kitten when you got your fans at your stadium? I don't know. I was very upset with it. As Sean alluded to, there was three shots on target all game, total of 18 shots, two yellow cards, a bunch of corners, just an all-around normal game of soccer with just lacking the goals, and goals are what make this sport a lot of fun. So this was an awful game to watch. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to add on to it beyond that. I think, kind of like you talked about, Man City definitely controlled the ball, at 72% possession in this game, but they didn't really do all that much with it. I think the best chance for them and overall in the game happened in the 18th minute. There was a corner that went to Ake, in a great position. He was freed up and he just put it right into Raya. Good save by Raya, but just in terms of positioning, it was right into him. Beyond that, it was mostly just Man City kicking the air out of the ball and a stifling defensive performance from Arsenal. I think, you know, we talked about how City hasn't beaten a team in the top five this year. I think it's just because those teams have the most defensive quality. They are able to, when they set up in a low block, out of possession, they're able to frustrate City. They have the quality center backs to stay with Haaland, to close down guys like De Bruyne and Foden to prevent them from having deep pops, you know, where they can make you pay. And I think overall, like you said, you know, Haaland and De Bruyne are definitely very quiet, and you have to credit the center backs of Arsenal and Declan Rice for that. I think all three, you know, of Gabriel, Saliba, and Rice were instrumental in Arsenal keeping a clean sheet and really, you know, stifling those main attackers for City. And, you know, just overall, it was a very negative game plan, I would say, in terms of the fact that, like, out of possession, like when City had the ball in the final third, you had Saka and Jesus like all the way back, basically almost playing like wingbacks. Obviously, with the ball, they were getting forward. But I just thought that was really interesting. It shows the respect that Arsenal have for Manchester City's attack, that they, you know, they set up that way. But it definitely did not make for, you know, appointment TV viewing. The people I feel worse for are the Premier League fans who are trying to get their family members into it. Hey, Easter Sunday, you know, we come back from church. Let's throw that on. You're going to love it. It's Man City Arsenal. It'll be a great game. No, it won't. It's the game that, you know, the casual soccer fan will shit on the 0-0 result with very little attack for either side. So that's definitely tough. But like I said, it was a must not lose game for both teams. And you know, they didn't. So for Arsenal, they dropped to second place and they're 2 points off the top. And then City is now 3 points off the top. And yeah, you could argue that Man City has not really hit their stride consistently since the new year, but they're just 3 points off the top of the table and they're still in the running for a treble, and repeating a treble. So it's a pretty incredible run that they're on, even despite maybe not playing at their very elite level.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with all those points. I will say, just agreeing with you even more, Arsenal's defense was unbelievable. Since this new year, they've been unstoppable. So I think Arsenal's in a pretty good position right now. I think that if they can keep that D-line healthy, then this is definitely a point for them in the season where things could turn, where they could actually become the favorites to win it. I mean, they win a couple more games, Liverpool City drop a game. I don't really see them losing many games left in this season with their defense the way it is right now.
Sure. So you weren't on last week when we went over this, so I'm interested to get your perspective. Who would you have, you know, now having the benefit of this game, and knowing what the table looks like and the games ahead, who would you have as the favorite for the last nine games to end up victorious?
I mean, I would probably have it at Arsenal right now, just based on their strength of schedule that they got remaining and their current form. I think if City had won that game, it would be a City, like 100% City's title to lose. But I think it would probably go Arsenal, Liverpool, City right now, because Liverpool's got more reason to play with heart than any other team. They got a win for Klopp. He deserves it. The fans know it. Players know it. So they're going to be trying as hard as possible. Arsenal's not bending the knee right now. So, yeah, I would probably go Arsenal, Liverpool, City.
Okay. Just interested to kind of see your perspective. Obviously, we didn't have you on last week. And then just one note before we move on. Arsenal are the first team to keep a clean sheet against Manchester City, both home and away, since Crystal Palace did it in 2020, 2021. And overall, yeah, we talked about the guys on the back end for Arsenal. I also wanted to shout out Josco Guardiol for City. I thought he was really good in this game, especially, you know, his ability to drive and beat the press. Arsenal weren't pressing, you know, as high as they normally do, but still thought he deserved a bit of credit sliding in there. And there's some worrying injuries for City, but we'll see how long-term guys like Stones, Ake, and Walker are out, you know, going into the stretch run.
Yeah, we're gonna need Kyle Walker back fast. I mean, he's the locker room hero. Said it a lot, but he
nobody pulls their willy out as often as Kyle Walker.
Yeah, Walker. Walker, 100%.
But speaking of guys who are constant or teams that are dealing with injury, Newcastle United, not probably the game of the weekend and one of the best games of the season, a 4-3 comeback victory over West Ham at St. James's Park. Isak and Harvey Barnes, who you kind of look a little bit like, had doubles in this game to lead a comeback win for Newcastle. And they move all the way up to eighth place and just 1 point off a European spot, which is held by their opponents in this game, West Ham United. Started hot for Newcastle. They had a penalty dispatched in the 6th minute, but then West Ham responded with a goal of their own through Mikel Antonio, and then another two. First one was Bowen to Kudus, and then Kudus to Bowen on each side of halftime to make it 3-1. And Bowen this year has been incredible. He's up to 15 goals on the season. He's got 8 away goals this year, which is more goals than any. His away goals would be the leading scorer for every other West Ham player this season. I think Kudus has 7 now. So he's been great, but unfortunately, somebody close to your heart, Calvin Phillips, on loan from Manchester City to West Ham, kind of had the turning point in this match, conceding a penalty to Anthony Gordon that Isak dispatched once again to make it 3-2. And then it was the Harvey Barnes show with a double off the bench to keep Newcastle's hopes alive to qualify for Europe once again. But great game of football overall. What do you have on this one?
Like you said, 7 goals. Definitely check out the highlights if you haven't watched it. I think this was a big game for Antonio, who had the first goal for West Ham. He hasn't been starting as of late. He's kind of been in a slump. I want to say this is his only 4th goal in the season. So, you know, to see him get the start and to put away a good chance early on in the game is great for the confidence, great for the team, because they do need the striker back. Antonio is a very good player when he's in form. So I'm a little excited to see that. You said Harvey Barnes, super sub. Absolutely. That dude changed the game. I mean, you come on as a sub, your mindset is, hey, there's a chance I can score, be the hero. How about you do it twice? So, yeah, I'm super excited for them. Massive, massive win for Newcastle. This is a team that we had expected at the beginning of the season to probably finish top 6. So it's interesting seeing what they're doing right now. But if they can get back on track, there's still enough time. There really is. There's, 8 games left in the season? So yep. Lots could happen. Lot could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. They actually have 9 games remaining because they hadn't played enough. I think it got pushed back. So they actually have a game in hand on West Ham as well. So they're only a point behind them with a game in hand. And then, you know, from there, obviously, you're chasing Manchester United for that 6th spot in Europa League. But, I mean, Conference League would still be a good season for them given all the injuries they've had. And unfortunately, they have another big blow. They lose their captain, Jamal Lascelles, to an ACL tear in this match. And they also lost Anthony Gordon for their game on Tuesday against Everton, his old club. He got a 2nd yellow card in stoppage time for kicking the ball away. Just a stupid mistake.
Big dumb. Come on.
Such a silly. And he went out and he ripped the rules for the Premier League. He kind of said, you know, the refs following the rules, but, you know, context is important. At the end of the day, this has been a rule all year. It's not like it was instituted, you know, midseason. They've called it in games for and against Newcastle. I've witnessed it. Liverpool got I think it was Trent got a yellow card in the game against Newcastle, and then Newcastle later in that game with Joe Linton got away with it. But you know the rule is there. Yeah, it's stupid. I don't necessarily think it should be one, but it's there, and you know he pays for it, and it's a big blow for him. Obviously, personally, going back to Everton, his boyhood club, as a scouser, I'm sure he'd love to stick a finger in their eye. But he's going to miss that game. And like we said, the chase for them is on to finish in that top 7.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that in my opinion, falls a little bit on the captain as well. Once the game gets to a 4-3 heated up toward the end, as the captain, you need to talk to your players, keep their head level, make sure that this exact scenario does not happen. We've been getting a lot of these late yellows and reds this season off of absolute bullshit, not bullshit calls, just off the ball. You know, not live plays, which is, you got to be smarter. Simple as that. If you're a captain, you need to keep your players in check.
Well, unfortunately, they did lose their captain for the season in this game. So that might have been, you know.
Oh, God, that's right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's his fault then. Bad ACLs. He needs to train it, you know.
That's a crazy take. The hot take of the week by far is Jamal Lascelles' fault that Anthony Gordon is a fuck. And got a 2nd yellow. The other thing I just wanted to mention on Gordon is that he won a penalty against Calvin Phillips. He actually won both the penalties that Isak scored in this game. The first one, fine. The second one is an absolute, as you would say, a load of malarkey. Because Gordon is basically, Calvin Phillips goes to clear the ball, and Gordon just throws himself between Phillips and the ball. He has no intention of playing it. He doesn't get a touch on the ball. It's just on the follow-through that Phillips is trying to hoof the ball upfield. He collides with Gordon's leg. Gordon throws himself on the ground until he gets the call. Then he pops up immediately. Just classic shithousery. But for me, it wasn't called a penalty in real time. I don't think it was a clear and obvious error. And I just, again, goes to show VAR overstepping its bounds and not being used for its intent. Because to me, again, I just don't think that's a clear and obvious error. We can move on from there, but the other thing I wanted to mention, you talked about Antonio, have to talk about Lucas Paqueta, who set up that Antonio goal with a little L1 triangle or LBY for you Xbox players. Beautiful pass to set up the first goal. He also got a hockey assist on the second one that Kudu scored, thanks to a pass from Bowen. So, I mean, again, we talked about him last week and how important he's been to West Ham all season. You know, that's on display once again. He's just such a beautiful, silky playmaker. One of those guys that, you know, you would pay to go see watch no matter who your team is. You know, he's worth box office admission on his own. Just a fun flair player for sure. And teams with loaded with flair players on both sides, Liverpool, Brighton at Anfield. I actually did not get to watch this game in real time. I was driving home from DC. So, Kyle, I'll throw it to you first if you had any takeaways on this one. And then I'll chime in with, you know, my overall thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a good heart show from Liverpool to come back and win that game after letting up an early goal. Brighton, they played pretty well, I thought, all around. I didn't see any really clear errors that led to big moments. I think Liverpool deserved both their goals. I would have the highlight of this game would be McAllister. I mean, he's a baller. Simple as that. That dude knows how to play the game. He's looking like De Bruyne out there with these passes. I think if you guys watched the game, the second goal for Salah was 100% McAllister. Granted, the finish was nice. Very nice finish. No, take nothing about it. There are players in the Premier League that would not have scored that goal. But the pass was everything. It was in stride. It was a little cut directly from the top of the box, right toward around the penalty line, through a bunch of defenders. It was perfection. So I feel like we're talking about this guy every week. I think it's a phenomenal signing for Liverpool. And, I mean, it's really nice to see Salah score again. He's playing out of his mind again this season. So I think anyone who had shit to say on Salah is pretty silenced after this season.
Yeah, if you had anything left to say at this point, like you said, it's been pretty much put in the dirt. Three assists and two goals for McAllister in his last five games, and I totally agree with you. I had the same takeaway. McAllister, for me, was the man of the match in this one. I thought he was phenomenal, just pulling the strings throughout, like you said. Such an intelligent player as well. I know you just compared him to KDB. I think he's the guy that's been brought in to replace the deep-lying playmaker ability that Thiago has. And I just think, you know, first of all, in the first half of the season, he's playing in the defensive midfield role. Now he's been pushed further forward with Endo coming back from the Asian Cup. And it's really just unlocked his offensive ability. He's been awesome. Just really, like I said, controlling games. And I think he was huge in this one. Also want to shout out Luis Diaz, who scored off a broken play to equalize. And Danny Welbeck opened the scoring in this one 2 minutes in with an absolute banger. No disrespect to him. He deserves all the credit. Just was surprised from him because he has had somewhat of a quiet season. The other guy for Brighton that stood out was Simon Adingra, constantly causing problems down that left-hand attacking side for Brighton, the right-hand side of Liverpool's defense. I mean, that's going to happen. You have Salah staying forward and Bradley Light in a bomb forward. There's always going to be that space to run in behind, but I thought Jarrell Kwanzaa marshaled him pretty well in this game, but still thought that Adingra was, you know, creative and caused problems throughout. Salah, like you said, good to see him back on the score sheet, but he was definitely a little wasteful by his standard. Thought he could have squared a couple of passes instead of taking on the harder shot. But listen, I'll take the 3 points any way we can get them, especially against quality opposition like Brighton. And we'll just kind of quickly bounce around the league now. Started off with Brentford Man United in a game that kind of was the opposite of the Arsenal Man City game, where the defenses were, you know, ruled the day. The offenses in this game were great with everything except for finishing for 90 plus minutes. Mason Mount actually scored in stoppage time to take the lead for United, and it looked like they were going to win a game that they had no business being in. They conceded 31 shots in this match, which is the second most shots conceded in a match all year. Kyle, do you want to guess who was the team that conceded the most shots in a match in the Premier League this season? Take a guess.
Most shots in a match. You would think Sheffield, but I'm going to go Chelsea.
No, you would actually go Manchester United.
Ooh.
Who gave up 34 shots in the first matchup with Liverpool. We'll talk about the reverse
well, of
fixture
course
of that.
Against Liverpool. You could just shoot like fiends.
Yeah, but we didn't score. It was 0-0.
You had what,
yeah,
30 shots on Brighton? That's crazy.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I mean, it looked like Brentford was going to unfortunately end up with nothing out of this game, despite creating a ton of chances, having 85 touches in United penalty box, the most by a team in any top flight match over the last three seasons. But Christopher Ayer scored off a really nice setup from Ivan Toney in the 90 plus ninth minute to equalize, and the points were shared in this one. Kyle, throw it over to you for Forest Palace, though.
Yeah, it's a battle of the bottom. Not really the bottom for Palace, but it's a big point for Nottingham Forest. They drew this game 1-1. The goals were pretty standard, one in the first half, one in the second half. I believe it was Chris Wood that scored the final goal, which is always nice to see Chris Wood back on the score sheet. But what this game does is it puts Nottingham into the safe zone. So now the relegation zone is strictly composed of all the three teams that came up. So, yeah, I can pretty much see Burnley and Sheffield already pretty much being out of this league. But I think it's going to come down to the final weeks between Luton, Nottingham Forest. You have a couple of teams down there with Everton, Brentford. I think we touched upon it a couple weeks ago, saying Brentford is by no means safe this season from the relegation zone because of their schedule they got left. I mean, Man U, this is not a dig at Man U when I say this, but that's going to be one of their easier games left on the season. So that's a big point for them, I think. But yeah, this was big for the relegation zone. I'm happy for Nottingham, but it was a pretty standard, boring, bottom of the table game.
Yeah. A game that was certainly not that was a 3-3 draw between Sheffield United at the very bottom of the table against Fulham at Bramall Lane. A 6-goal second half in this one. Rodrigo Muniz scored what I would assume would be your goal of the weekend with his 8th goal in the last 8th game in stoppage time.
Oh, that goal was beautiful. Fucking orgasmic. Guys, I mean, a perfect bicycle kick. I take that back. A perfect scissor kick. It was a pretty good bike. His foot was at least 5 feet off the ground, but it was across the body, across the net. Goalie, no chance. And, I mean, late scissor kicks are always a thing of beauty. Always.
Yep, absolutely. You love to see that. The other thing, just because you mentioned it, Burnley does have points in their last three matches, thanks to a 2-2 draw with Chelsea this week. They're only 4 points off of safety. So, I mean, you and I both counted them out months ago, but they have strung together a couple of points, and now they're just kind of entering that danger zone of maybe they could find a way to stay up. I mean, it would be an incredible job by Vincent Kompany if they were able to do that just based on how they started. But they're certainly opportunities there. They have Wolves coming this weekend. They go away to Everton. They still have Sheffield United on the docket, as well as Newcastle, and then they finish with Forest at home. So, I mean, depending on obviously this week, there's still a chance for Burnley. That door is just cracked open a little bit.
Definitely a chance, but it's been over 25 years since all the teams that got promoted got relegated. I think it was 97, 98. So to see that happen again, back then it was Bolton, Crystal Palace, and I think Barnsley. Yeah. So it's been quite a while since we've seen that. So I mean, that just goes to show you the strength of the Champions League, Championship League, I guess you call it. But they're usually busting out at least one or two teams that end up staying in the Prem, quality teams. So to see all three back down there is pretty surprising. But the way they've been playing this year, I just don't have too much confidence any one of them is going to stay. And if they do, they need to seriously work on it. Luton, I can understand because they started the season with no stadium. But, you know, the other two teams, that you got to do a little better if you want to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we talked about it before. Sheffield United, just their business was probably the worst of anyone in the summer. And Burnley, made some promising signings, but overall they probably just didn't do enough in terms of getting, you know, Premier League established veteran experience to be, you know, strong enough to stay up. Teams that certainly on the other end of the table had a good weekend were both Villa and Spurs. They expand their gap for the Champions League spots on Manchester United by 2 points, as they each had home victories over Wolves and Luton Town respectively. That is massive for both of those teams. And
who do you like out of those two to end up on top for the season? Because they pretty much have the same amount of points, right?
Yeah, I mean, Tottenham's 3 points behind, but they have a game in hand. That game obviously will be played this week, and we'll talk about it right now, and it's West Ham-Tottenham. But I think I like Tottenham. I think they have a little bit more quality than Villa. Villa's gotten, you know, bitten with even more injuries of late. You know, obviously John McGinn's out for the next couple of games as well, including a game against City this week. I think Tottenham finishes in fourth, but it looks like, you know, obviously depending on the performances of the other teams in Europe still, but it looks like the Premier League will get five spots. So both of those teams should get in. But I think if it is four, it'll be Tottenham in that fourth spot and Villa pulling up the rear in fifth.
Yep, I think I fully agree with you. And I think that fully depends on if Son can stay healthy, because, I mean, without him, they got no chance. But with him, he's playing unbelievable. He had the game winner this week, the only goal. Like, that guy stays healthy, I think you're spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's been huge. Like you said, he had the winner this weekend. The one thing, both of those teams played the top three in the coming weeks. So they will certainly have an impact on what the title race looks like as well. But just going back to West Ham versus Tottenham, we have a London derby. Tottenham has a chance to gain ground on Aston Villa, obviously, because Villa plays away at the Etihad, and we know how difficult it is to win there. It's almost impossible. I mean, a team like Arsenal, who's been playing in the form of their life, basically showed up to park the bus and nick a point because they didn't believe that they could beat City head-to-head. So Villa's certainly in a tough spot, and I think West Ham, obviously coming off a disappointing result in a 4-3 defeat, this game's got goals written all over it. That's my overall takeaway on this one. So much attacking quality between both sides. But overall, just wanted to mention the reverse fixture in this one was a 2-1 victory for West Ham back in early December. That's kind of when Tottenham was going through all of their injuries. So we'll see what this game holds. That'll be played on Tuesday. So tomorrow afternoon. So will be a big importance in terms of the impact on Champions League and Europa League spots.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think there's three good games this weekend, but another great one is going to be the City game. It's City versus Aston Villa. Aston Villa did win last time, and we can't let that happen again. It's as simple as that. If we drop more points, the race is pretty much over. 8 games left, we're already 3 back. We cannot go 6 games back. I'm sorry, 6 points back. Because, you know, Liverpool, Arsenal, they should win this weekend. Knock on wood for that one. But I take that back.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely. You knocked on wood. Thanks, man. That's so kind of you. James will appreciate that as well.
All right, yeah. But it's quintessential that they win this game. Let's just leave it at that. I think it's going to come down to Pep Guardiola. He has to do some crazy-ass Pep shit right here. You know, the reason we haven't beaten any of the top five is that the top five are the goddamn top five in the league. They are very good teams. They study. So Pep Guardiola doing his normal park the bus, pass, possession up the way, all the way till you get to the 18-yard box, doesn't work against the top five. And that is what we've seen every week is, hey, 71, 78% possession. Hey, almost 1,000 passes. Oh, look at that. 18 shots, 6 of them on target, 0 goals, 1 goal. So it's not going to work against these top-tier teams. He's got to come out. You mentioned Guardiola having that great, great game when he's running up with the wing. That's something that Pep doesn't usually do. Send the defenders all the way up with the ball. If your name isn't Kyle Walker, that's not on the play sheet, and that's why it works. It's not what they're expecting, and I think that's going to be a key to victory.
Okay, absolutely. Definitely a good one to watch. Should be a low-scoring affair as well. The high line for Villa obviously could be exposed, though. A guy who didn't play in that reverse fixture was De Bruyne. Neither did Rodri, to be fair. And I think having both of those guys back, City should certainly be in the driver's seat for that game. Right. Next one is definitely, to me, a very evenly matched contest. It's Brighton versus Arsenal at the Amex. These teams have been very even over their last 10 games. There's 5 Brighton wins, 4 Arsenal wins, and 1 draw. Arsenal did win the reverse fixture in this game and also won at the Amex last year. But There was that game at the end of the season at the Emirates where Brighton smoked Arsenal 3-0. We've talked about it multiple times that Brighton have the ability to take points off the top sides, but this year it really has not been the case. Against the top six, they have 6 losses in only 9 games played. So it will be kind of interesting to see if they can kind of snap that hoodoo or if that's something that will continue. I think, again, like you talked about, Arsenal are really strong defensively. And, you know, Brighton have only been held scoreless 2 or 3 times this whole season, but it could certainly happen again at their own barn this weekend.
Yeah, I'm with you. One thing I did want to touch upon, though, was Rodri. You mentioned he's back. He did set the all-time Prem record with 59 games now. The last 59 times Rodri has started in Man City Blue, he has not lost one. It's over 395 days of just winning. So, you know, when he's starting the game, they don't lose. So, you know, maybe you start him. You know, like, maybe. But, yeah, I think if he starts, we should be good.
Yep. And then last but not least, by any means, is the Northwest Derby. It's Manchester United versus Liverpool at Old Trafford. A revenge game of sorts. Obviously, Liverpool lost to United in the FA Cup 3 weeks ago. And I said at the time, it did make me feel a little bit better knowing that we were going to be going there in 3 weeks. It's tough to beat United, no matter how up and down they are, at Old Trafford, especially twice. But what do you feel about this game going into it?
I think United's in a lot of trouble because, I mean, they're letting up goals and Liverpool is shooting the ball. So I could see a very high score line for Liverpool right now. If Man U doesn't score at least 2 goals, they're not getting any points out of this.
Interesting. Yeah, I think they're going to be a little bit more defensive than you and I think in this one. Both teams, though, like you said, play very open transitional styles. So there is certainly potential for a lot of goals in this game. I thought we were going to smash them at Anfield when there was almost, you know, it was Johnny Evans, Rafa Varane, and some homeless guy they picked up on the bus ride down playing in the back line. And it was 0-0. So my confidence against United is certainly not as high as it would be if you asked me about this game 3 months ago. Furthering on to that, it was a big boost for Manchester United over the weekend. They got the return of Mason Mount, Casemiro, and the 5'10" guy that the United fans call the Butcher named Lisandro Martinez. So all of them should be back in at least the squad for the Liverpool match. I think Casemiro and Martinez should definitely start as well. And then, like we talked about, the reverse fixture of this game was the only, was, you know, 34 shots conceded in a 0-0 draw. Liverpool hopefully gets some creativity back in this game. It looks like Trent, Curtis Jones, and potentially Diogo Jota could all be back for this match. There's also a game midweek against Sheffield United that'll give those guys an opportunity to maybe get some minutes in their legs before playing more against United at the weekend. So that certainly will be interesting to see. And on top of that, we also have your lock of the week.
Oh, yeah, talk about some interesting things. As the champion in lock of the week for the Premier League state of mind, I think we're going to have to go ahead and fuck up James's chances at the title. So I'm going to go ahead and say Arsenal is going to win. I think it's a strategic lock for someone who is 3 points out of first place in the Premier League and sitting behind Arsenal. So, you know, play both sides. Win-win scenario. Guys, bet on Arsenal. They should win. They will win. You know, I'll go as far as to say Arsenal is going to win this game. Lock it in.
You're guaranteeing
it. I am guaranteeing it. Lock it in. Nothing is going to change it.
Okay. Well, Kyle, you are first place in a very dreadful lock of the week. James held 2-6-1 with Fulham's draw at the weekend. He talked about their away form being shite. It turns out their away form is shite for a reason. And then I'm at 2-6, which is even worse. And you, sir, are at 3-5 with an opportunity to really...
prestigious 3-5.
To stretch that lead to all the way up to a whopping 4-5. We'll have that game and a ton of others to talk about next week. But until then, signing off for now. We'll have you back in the graceful hands of James next week, but appreciate everyone
taking
a listen.
Unless he gets like the bubonic plague or something in the meantime.
Yep, absolutely. Well, he is a big old rat, so they transfer well in the bubonic plague. But on that note, we'll sign off.